Welcome to episode 20 of the 10 Golden Rules of Internet Marketing podcast. We have two of the most controversial figures in internet marketing today, Ted Murphy from PaperPost and Jason Calacanis, the outspoken founder of Mahalo.com. We have a little eBay kerfuffle and the Oscar-winning Song of the Week.
Welcome to the 10 Golden Rules of Internet Marketing podcast, featuring the latest strategies and techniques to drive traffic to your website and convert that traffic into sales. Now here's the CEO of 10goldenrules.com, Jay Berkowitz.
Well, good morning, good afternoon, good evening. Wherever and whatever time this podcast finds you, thank you so much for joining us for episode 20. I've had a couple wild, wild weeks, including a trip to Costa Rica and some recording there. A wild 9 days in which I did 7 presentations. So if you met us at one of these meetings, if you were at the DMA, the South Florida Interactive Marketing Association Search Training, our Internet Marketing Bootcamp in Las Vegas, the Rocket Place eBay Conference in Orlando, or the Palm Beach Foundation nonprofit event, your audio that we recorded at the events is in the hopper, and I promise to get it on the show in the next few weeks. If this is your first 10 Golden Rules podcast, a warm, warm welcome to you. Each week or so, we cover the internet marketing and how to use the internet for business, personal productivity, and fun. You can subscribe for free at iTunes or listen to each show at 10goldenrules.com. Just click on the podcast link or find us in several major podcast directories, including Podshow and Podcast Pickle. I record this show live in one take using a software called Cast Blaster, and I record interviews at events using an M-Audio digital recorder. There's no fancy post-production, so you'll probably get a couple bumps and bobbles. Please join in, though. This thing is great when you participate. Call our K7 audio line at 206-888-6606, or email me with questions and comments to jay@10goldenrules.com. Share any new internet marketing ideas you have or websites you're using to improve your personal productivity. Song called Falling Slowly, and it's actually the Oscar winner for Achievement in Music, written for Motion Pictures original song. It's called Falling Slowly, and we're going to close the show, as we always do, with a PodSafe song, the Song of the Week. So let's get rolling with some of our call-ins. We have, first up, Keith Burtis with a really, really nice social media marketing story.
Hi, Jay. Keith Burtis here. How are you? First, I want to thank you for inviting me to call in and let your listeners know the little project I'm working on. But first, I think I might want to give you a little bit of background. In terms of the social media space, I've only been really involved in it for about 6 months now, and I got involved first through actually audiobooks. And after searching around for different content and marketing content, I came upon Joe Jaffe's blog and Joe Jaffe's podcast. And after I had heard the iPhone for an episode and all of the little experiments that he runs on his podcast, I really got hooked. Since then, I've purchased an iPod, and I use iTunes, and I've been listening to yourself and Mitch Joel and Marketing Over Coffee, et cetera, et cetera. I really enjoy it. But the reason I'm calling is, first off, I want to thank you. I am a wood turner and a cabinet maker, and I am trying to get engaged the night before PodCamp Toronto. I'm actually going to PodCamp Toronto, and I'm using that as a little bit of a diversion to ask my girlfriend to marry me, in terms of not just taking her on a trip and having a little bit of a diversion so I get to learn a little something and at the same time get to spend a nice weekend with my girlfriend and ultimately hopefully get engaged as long as she says yes. But the bottom line was I was right on track for making all of my payments to the folks that were had actually made the ring for me. And it turned out that weekend was going to be perfect in terms of, you know, paying the ring off. But I came into a little bit of a snag with my car, and I had to put a bunch of money into that last week. So I thought, you know, I'm really going to try and turn a negative into a positive. And I'm going to talk to the folks that I talk to every day on Twitter and some other blogs and influential media makers and whatnot, and try to start a little fund, if you will, where I could actually deliver value to the community through my wood turning, and sell some of my bowls and some of the wine stoppers and stuff that I make, and really give value to the community, and sort of use it as a social media experiment at the same time, where they can, you know, come to my site, which is www.magicwoodworks.com. That's magicwoodworks.com. And underneath the social miracle button, you will find my little social miracle page where I am turning bowls literally day and night and selling them on my webpage to basically fund the ability to get the ring. The hotel is booked, and I really didn't want to be denied, but I'm using Twitter, I've been blogging on WordPress, and I use a little bit of Facebook, and those are basically the venues I've been using for the last 6 months, and I've really been able to build up a community, and I know that you talk about that a lot on your podcast, and the importance of building a community and building the long tail of content, and I'm really beginning to see the light on that type of stuff. So thank you for inviting me to comment on your podcast. And ultimately, you did purchase a bowl from me, and I'm extremely grateful and extremely thankful for that. And hopefully, if your listeners are interested, they will swing by my website and kind of help me make my social miracle come true. It is Monday right now, and ultimately, my little social miracle project will probably have to end by Wednesday, because Friday is PodCamp Toronto and one will be leaving. So that's it. And again, thanks a lot, and thanks for your content, and I look forward to all your future episodes. Bye.
Well, thanks for calling in, Keith. I first heard about Keith's outreach on Twitter, and I went to his website, and there was a handcrafted bowl called the Pot of Gold Bowl. And, of course, it had to come to the 10 Golden Rules head office, being the Pot O' Gold Bowl. So I bought the bowl, I sent Keith a note, and Keith was good enough to call in. Now, here's the great news. Everything went according to plan. Keith achieved his social media miracle. He raised the money for the ring. They made it to PodCamp Toronto. I have the bowl, and Keith is happily engaged to his now fiancée. So it's too late to contribute to the ring, but if you like wood art, it's not too late to check out Keith's website and blog. And there's some really interesting stuff there and a really interesting case study for social media. And of course, all links will be in our show notes. Next up, we have a couple calls regarding eBay. I have some interesting speaking engagements lined up, and I have to send out a big thank you to Scott Pooler and Debbie Levitt. After the As Was conference, they recommended me for eBay Live, and I will be speaking at eBay Live with some notables, including Seth Godin, and I think I follow the CEO of eBay, and I can't thank them enough. It's a massive event. I think there's somewhere between 10 and 15,000 people who attend eBay Live. So let's get to Scott Pooler, who was kind enough to recommend me to, he's a podcast listener, and he recommended me to the eBay conference.
Hi, Jay. It's Scott at allbusinessauctions.com/blog. I'd like to thank you for accepting a challenge to come to the As Was conference at Disney February 28th through March 1st. We appreciate you coming and joining us, eBay people, at the As Was conference and giving us the keynote address on the final day so we can all learn some more golden rules. I've been an avid fan of yours ever since I found your podcast on iTunes, and I have learned many, many things from your podcasts and other sources of information you've directed me to. Hopefully someday I can be a resource depended upon as much as you are. I'll be speaking at the conference on eBay consignment sales, and I'll be very pleased to hear your keynote speech. And I just wanted to call in and thank you for coming to Orlando, helping us to present the advantages of internet marketing to all the eBay sellers out there. Have a great month. I know you'll be busy. Looking forward to seeing you in Orlando. Have a great evening, or great morning, or great afternoon. And one last question. Any new internet social networking applications that you've been using lately? Have a great day, Jay. Bye.
Thanks, Scott. We have some audio from that event coming up, and also some contributions from Scott. It was great to meet a podcast listener live in Orlando, and Scott is a real pro at internet marketing, so he had a couple great suggestions. We'll be sharing that in the next week or two. To answer your questions, there is one new social application I'm checking out. It's called Seesmic, S-E-E-S-M-I-C, and I kind of compare it to a video Twitter. You're able to download short videos and create a Twitter-like homepage for your recent Twitters or your recent video tweets. So that's Seesmic.com. I got invited to the alpha. It's really just rolling out. It's not available for Mac yet, and there's a few bumps that they're working out. And it's a founder out of France, and they got a new round of funding. So we'll watch Seesmic. The other thing I'm really getting into is Compete.com. And it's a great tool to analyze web traffic and competitive information amongst four or five different websites. So I seem to be going to Compete.com a couple times a week to compare the web traffic of companies and their competitors. Okay, next up is Auction Wally, Walt Kalenda. And he's been on the show before, and he's commenting on our eBay interview in episode 19 and some of the changes happening over at eBay. The community's definitely up in arms about this one. Let's get to Walt Kalenda.
Hey, Jay, this is Walt Kalenda, a.k.a. Auction Wally. I run the online antiques appraisal site, auctionwally.com. I've been a fan of your blog and your podcast for quite a while now. I've referenced it, I've commented a few times, and have linked on my site to it. I just listened to episode 19 of your awesome podcast again, and I really, really wanted to weigh in on the eBay thing. You know, I'm not an alarmist. I'm not one of these that just goes out and bashes eBay at the drop of a hat, but I really think that you ought to hear the other side of the coin on the changes that eBay's made. Maybe take a look around at some of the forums for yourself and see the absolute firestorm that has gone on over the last changes. This is a very, very big thing. Now, if you'd like to talk to me, I'd love to talk to you. I'm an eBay veteran, so I know what I'm doing and what I'm talking about. Although I may be opinionated, it comes from 9 years on eBay. I can verify that, and I've been 25 years in the auction and antiques business. I'm a licensed auctioneer, and there is a lot to the story about the eBay changes. There are a lot of people sitting back infuriated with the changes. A lot of people don't understand them. And I think what angers people more than anything about the fee increases is, you know, eBay kind of sold it to people as a fee decrease. Oh, it's going to be better for everybody. And they were really a disguised fee increase for most people. Basically, what eBay did with these fee structures is it's cheaper and less expensive for the people that don't actually have much luck selling anything, the people that either list low-end items or list things that don't sell. If you sell, and if you sell in volume and quite a bit, you actually pay more, which is, I mean, in the real world, that's kind of backwards, isn't it, in the business world? So Debbie Levitt had a good reason for pausing when you asked her if it benefits power sells. It does not. They get a discount off of what eBay, so eBay raised the fees and then they gave them a little bit off of the raised fees. And the thing is, people are not even so much as upset about the fees as the new feedback system they're going to be instituting. The new feedback system does not allow sellers to leave feedback. for buyers anymore. I think it's a very, very dangerous path they're going down with that one. That's one of the cores of eBay's business model is their feedback system. It has worked extremely well with a few bumps here and there, but it has always, always worked well, and they are taking half of the equation out and tying the hands of the sellers on this. So, thank you. Bye.
Well, thanks so much for calling in. What do you think out there? I definitely want to get Walt on a future show, and we'll discuss this in detail. And I know we have a bunch of other eBay experts who listen to the show. So please join in with your comments and questions for Wally and Scott and Debbie, and I'm sure they'll be kind enough to weigh in on this issue. Our call-in line, our K7 line, 206-888-6606. If you have something to share, pause the show right now, add us to your speed dial, and give us a call, 206-888-6606. Next up, let's go a little lighter, and here's Larry Port with the joke of the week.
Hello, this is Larry Port with RocketMatter.com with the joke of the week. This week's joke was voted the funniest joke in the world by the Laugh Lab Internet Project. Two hunters are out in the woods when one of them collapses. He doesn't seem to be breathing, and his eyes are glazed over. The other guy whips out his cell phone and calls the emergency service. He says, "My friend is dead. What can I do?" The operator says, "Calm down. I can help. First, let's make sure he's dead." There's a silence on the phone. Then a shot is heard. Back on the phone, the guy says, "Okay, now what?" This is Larry Port from RocketMatter.com with the joke of the week.
Okay, Larry. I'm trying to do that one live so I can enjoy it with y'all. And good news from Rocket Matter. The product was in beta when Larry's called into the show a couple times and participated, and they just launched last week, and Larry's reports some great success so far. So congratulations to Larry Port and the team over at Rocket Matter. It is an engine for you to use to manage a big law firm, and it tracks all of your hours and tracks a whole bunch of different components. And I want to learn more about it. So maybe we'll get Larry live on the show. And big thank you to Len Edgerly, who called in last week and suggested that Larry do the joke of the week as an MP3 instead of a call-in. The quality was great. I'm not sure if that was the best joke ever, but thanks so much to Larry Port from RocketMatter.com. Okay, next up, let's get to the team at 10 Golden Rules and see what they've been up to in the live blog section. First up, Susan.
Hi, this is Susan. My topic today is about using social news sites such as Dig and Spin to promote your personal brand and blog. Being part of the social news scene is a lot of work and takes time, but is also a great way to brand yourself and become an influential part of the community. Here are some things to keep in mind before you dive in. Number 1. Determine the site you want to use and learn how it works. See how the community responds to certain types of stories. Observe the kind of stories that are on the front page too. 2. Find the most popular users. Learn about what they do for a living and befriend them. 2 benefits for doing this. You learn from those who know more than you do, and they could help you out by featuring posts on their own blog. 3. Since being part of these types of communities takes time, you need to set time out of your day to explore and contribute. Just like being part of any online community, you take time to get to know it and submit stories, as well as comment on other stories you find interesting. In order to build some sort of trust, you need to start by submitting stories that may be useful to others. The 4th thing to keep in mind is to connect with other users of the site and get to know them. Once you build a reputation of being a helpful part of that community and build contacts, most likely other people will return the favor back to your blog posts. And number 5, ask friends that aren't on these social news sites to join. It's not a community unless there are people participating, and you will automatically have another friend added to your list of connections. The most popular social news sites are Dig, Mix, Reddit, and Spin. Spin is focused on marketing-related stories, and there are new sites like these popping up all the time.
This is Jeff. After much rumor and speculation, Google announced that effective April 1st, the display URL and the destination URL must be the same for all AdWords ads. Most ads are not affected by this change. The Google blog advised that redirects will still work, such as if you use a tracking URL, and vanity URLs are still accepted as well, for instance, 10goldenrules.com/podcast, as are the use of subdomains, such as podcast.10goldenrules.com. AdWords will be sending alerts to the AdWords accounts affected before the April 1st deadline to let you know if you have ads that are not in compliance with the new policy.
Hi, this is Anthony. My topic today? An Elvis sighting at Affiliate Summit Las Vegas. I think that I saw Elvis from the Roof Deck Club at the Rio during the Affiliate Summit in Las Vegas this past week, where more online marketers launched ad networks. Soon, every internet show will be called the Ad Network Summit. At each of the recent Affiliate Summit shows, it seems a new ad network will launch or elevate itself in this arena of online marketing. This year, one of the new hits was the Affiliate Kings, who gave away custom skateboard decks at their booth. There are two tiers of advertising networks. First-tier ad networks have their own advertisers and publishers, they have high-quality traffic, and they often serve ads and traffic to second-tier networks. Second-tier networks, which is most of what pops up at these shows, have done some of their own advertisers and publishers, as well as they are actively syndicating ads from other advertising networks. One issue that seems to trouble the merchants is knowing where the volume comes from with the so-called blind networks. Often the offers are broken out to incentivize registration paths, and with promises to win a free iPod, these sources are magnets for fraud and low-quality leads. Groups like OLGA or OGA attempt to clean lead generation and CPA programs in check. If an ad network associates themselves with this new association, then chances are they're trying to stay above the radar and white hat. The rep networks, which own their own publishing inventory, are generally in this category. By the way, that wasn't Elvis that I saw in Las Vegas, but I did see Wayne Brady make a surprise appearance at the hotel bar at Palazzo, where he joined the band for impromptu covers of Marvin Gaye, Stevie Wonder, and James Brown.
Hi, this is Margie. A couple days ago, Seth Godin's blog featured a thought-provoking entry titled, Not a Trick Question. His question was, is it better to make stuff aimed at people who usually buy your product, or aimed at people who rarely do? I often find myself asking a variation of this question when it comes to marketing our clients. Although it's vitally important to identify a target you do well with, I often challenge clients to think along the lines of how to reach untapped markets. It can be as simple as asking, how can I modify my marketing plan, even if only slightly, to appeal to a different or more broad demographic? Sometimes it involves an actual change to the product or service, but often it requires only a tweak in messaging to open up new opportunities. So which do you pick, the familiar or the untapped? Seth was referring to a product, so he pointed out you have to pick one or the other. But when it comes to marketing, you can easily choose to target your messaging to more than one demographic and test to determine effectiveness.
Hi everyone, this is Michael. According to the International Herald Tribune, paid search will reach $8.6 billion in the United States compared to $2.6 billion spent for natural search engine optimization. With people starting to have higher trust in natural search, experts claim that companies will begin to focus more on optimization and less on paid links. This is putting a little strain on Google stock. One expert mentioned that almost 75% of all clicks come from unpaid search results. Consumers are finding better search results with the natural search than pay-per-click. Advertisers and brand name companies are beginning to realize this and refocus their natural search optimization efforts to gain search engine real estate, which is on the left-hand side, to attract their consumers.
Well, thanks to the team, as always, a real group of provocative blog entries, and they turn them into live audio for us for the show. What do you guys think? Margie and Seth Godin asked a really interesting question. Who do you target? Do you target the most likely prospects, or do you target a broader range of people and try to bring them into the conversation? What do you think about natural search engine optimization as the biggest opportunity up and coming for search marketing, internet marketing, and frankly, budgets? Like, where are you guys at with a oncoming recession threat? Where are your budget plans for the coming year? I'd love to hear what everyone out there, all the listeners, have to say. Give us a call, 206-888-6606. I recently wrote a blog post and I said that I saw two entries the same day. Affiliate Summit announced that the show was completely sold out, and tickets were being sold on eBay. I thought that was fantastic. Sean Collins, the organizer of the show, said that he partially funded his college education by scalping tickets for events, and so he's wide open to people selling tickets to Affiliate Summit on eBay. And at the same day, the Internet iRetail show announced that their booths were sold out. So everywhere I go in internet marketing, the market is still super hot. Everything's still sold out. Everything's still really hard to get into. But what are you guys seeing out there in your businesses? We're seeing a couple of our retail clients reporting some softness in their sales, not hitting, you know, their sales levels of last year. And it's the first softness I've seen in the economy in the last few years. But I'm not seeing it in the pure internet economy in the online shows. So I'd love your feedback and comments on that topic. Okay, so now let's get to our featured interviews. We have, as I mentioned, a couple fairly high-profile figures in the internet marketing business. First up, we're going to get to Ted Murphy and PaperPost. If you don't already know about Ted, I interviewed him at Webmaster World, and Ted is the founder of a relatively controversial approach to internet marketing called PaperPost. So let's get to the interview, and I'll talk a little bit about it when we get out. I'm here with Ted Murphy. He's the founder and CEO of IZEA, also known as PaperPost, right?
Well, IZEA is the parent company of PaperPost, but it was originally PaperPost was its own company.
Great. And tell me how the products work and how people can use them.
Well, IZEA offers a variety of different platforms and services geared towards advertisers and bloggers. The most well-known of those is definitely PaperPost, and PaperPost is a marketplace that connects advertisers and bloggers for the purpose of promoting products, services, or websites.
Great. And PaperPost is certainly a controversial type of approach. Some people feel that it ruins the anonymity of blogging and posting. How do you guys counter that?
I think that's a pretty naive view of the blogosphere. One of the reasons that PaperPost was originally created was we recognized that there was a large amount of agencies and PR firms that were already reaching out to bloggers, and we wanted to be able to offer a service that would allow smaller advertisers who couldn't afford agencies or big PR firms the ability to reach out and promote their products or services on a large scale.
So tell me a couple of the case studies of companies that really like it and feel it's a credible way to go.
We've got over 12,500 different advertisers now. Everyone from movie studios to the small mom and pop, Yahoo stores. Some of our bigger advertisers are using it to gain buzz around a movie. Another one is...
Anyone we'd heard of?
Right now we're promoting the latest Johnny Depp film, Sweeney Todd. We just finished up a campaign for Hamilton Beach where they're promoting their power mixers. We have a good amount of the bloggers.
Yeah, Hamilton Beach power mixers.
Yep, power mixers. So, we have a good amount of bloggers in our system that are stay-at-home moms that are very passionate bloggers. And, for them in particular, that was a great opportunity because they could target those types of bloggers.
And how does it typically work? How does someone know if someone's posted, and how much do they pay per post?
The payments range from anywhere from $5 to $2,500 per post. When a blogger creates their post, they submit it back to us, and we do a review to make sure that there's no pornography or anything else like that. They always have the ability to speak their mind, but we do have to insulate the advertiser and from things that they wouldn't want to be associated with. And that all comes back into our system in real time. The advertiser can track the page views and the click-throughs from the individual post, and they all do all that through a self-serve mechanism.
As an advertiser, how do you engage and do you set a limit?
when an advertiser comes into our system, they can select criteria for the types of bloggers that they want to accept in the program. So that can be based on traffic, or that can be based on their quality ranking in our system. That can also be based on the individual categories. Based off that, we give them some price ranges of what the averages are in the system. And then they name really their own price of what they're willing to pay. Ultimately, it comes down to the ROI that they get back from our system that drives the price.
Did you hear about the big pay-per-Twitter announcement?
I did not.
There was a major, major announcement that there's a new pay-per-tweet program, and there was several thousand dollars that had already been made in the program, and it was a huge announcement, and it was made on April 1st. And then I found out it was an April Fool's joke.
I was like, really? Because I didn't hear about that.
Maybe that's a new business model for you guys. I shouldn't have brought it up.
Well, there's plenty of room out there for people to monetize their influence. And if I wouldn't be surprised if there was a service like that, because if someone has, a couple hundred or a couple thousand of people that are subscribed to, their Twitter, and they promote something, ultimately that can drive some traffic for an advertiser.
That's great. Any last things you'd want to say to some of your proponents or your critics?
I would say thank you for all the free PR. we just recently crossed 100,000 bloggers in our system and are showing no signs of slowing. It's only growing faster and faster. And look forward to releasing Social Spark in January of next year and giving
what's
our...
That, what's that going to do?
Social Spark is really actually turning the paper post model inside out. We are being completely transparent in the blogger, and as far as exposing the bloggers that are in the network, exposing the advertisers, providing mechanisms for them to communicate freely with each other, and providing a level of granularity from a blogger standpoint, where we're actually providing traffic information to an advertiser, demographic information, so they understand what this blogger's actual influence is.
And how can I get a $2,500 paid post? What's that for?
You're going to have a pretty high-ranking blog. I believe that post was for somebody that was in the top 10,000 of Alexa. There's only 10,000 of them out there. And actually, probably a very small amount of those are blogs.
Great. Well, thanks so much, Ted. I appreciate your candor.
All right. Thank you.
Oh, that was...
Okay, so if you didn't already know about Ted Murphy and PaperPost, what do you think? Did you know that blogs can and often do contain paid-for endorsements? When you read a movie review about Sweeney Todd, does it bug you that somebody might have been paid for that? Please call in and share your feelings, 206-888-6606. Now, I wanted to play the interview with Ted so that you have some background for the next conversation. Our next guest, Jason Calacanis, has been an outspoken critic of PaperPost, and he's also been very outspoken about a number of the not totally ethical internet marketing practices. Now, clearly there's some gray area here, right? If the blogger totally loves the movie Sweeney Todd and adds a link to the Sweeney Todd website and gets paid for that, I think we're all cool with that. But if someone goes and does a post for that mixer and they've never seen it, never tried it, and they're just doing it to get the pay-per-post revenue, I think we all have a problem with that. Now, there's that gray area. So let me talk a little bit about Jason first. I sat down with him right after he presented the opening keynote at Affiliate Summit in Las Vegas last week. He's incredibly well-known in the dot-com world. He founded an industry publication called the Silicon Alley Reporter. Then he developed Weblogs, Inc., which he sold to AOL in 2004 for over $25 million. He's also very, very passionate and outspoken on many issues. His blog is very popular, and he does a lot of video at calacaniscast.com. Links, of course, in the show notes. And one theme that he's been very, very consistent about is the overall goodness and ethical behavior on the internet. Jason called out unethical affiliate marketers in his Affiliate Summit keynote. And he called out PaperPost in the same presentation and our conversation that follows. And he recently called out the black hat or unethical SEOs or search engine optimizers. And then he got in even more trouble when he said SEO is BS in the question and answer session. And he used the more colorful term. He didn't use BS. So let's get to the conversation with Jason, and I'll expand more when it's done. But, you know, I want to say that I think Jason really, really means well, but often he comes across as a little bit brash and a little bit straight to the point. You know, he honestly does care about the goodness in the internet. So anyways, let's get to our conversation with Jason. And oh yeah, about halfway through, Jason and I almost got wiped out by an attorney who was riding a motorized scooter due to an injury he had. And he had his cast and he had his crutches and he was driving this motorized scooter and he crashed right into our table. So that's what the pause is about halfway through. So let's get to Jason Kalikinis from Mahalo.com. I'm here with Jason Kalikinis, and Jason just gave the keynote presentation at Affiliate Summit West in Las Vegas. Congratulations, Jason.
Well, thank you. I put a little bit of work into it, and I tried to think about the industry a lot because, frankly, I'm not an expert on affiliate marketing, and just like I'm not an expert on search engine optimization, and, you know, when I give talks at these things and I'm not an expert on the space and I have a peripheral knowledge, I have to sort of take the knowledge I do have in publishing and building quality sites and sort of try to learn about these other disciplines and how I think what I've learned intersects with what other people are doing.
So I want to get into some of the content in a minute, but first let's start with your background.
Well, I'm a serial entrepreneur. I've done a bunch of different startups, and I'm on my fourth right now, or fifth, depending on how you count them. And I've been up, I've been down, I've been left, I've been right. I've, you know, had some big successes, I've had some big failures. You know, I just love what I do. I'm an internet entrepreneur who just likes to swing the bat and keep, you know, if you keep swinging the bat, at some point you're going to hit the ball. And so, you know, I'm just having fun doing what I do.
So Silicon Alley was the first one that gained a lot of prominence?
Yeah, I did a Silicon Valley Reporter, a magazine about the internet industry in 1996, and it grew it to a pretty large business with a lot of employees, and it was very high profile, and wound up selling that to Dow Jones. Then I did Weblogs, Inc., which is a big blogging company, and sold that to AOL. And now I'm doing a company called Mahalo, M-A-H-A-L-O, which is means thank you in Hawaiian. It's a very special word, and Mahalo is a human-powered search engine, sort of somewhere between the Wikipedia, DMOZ, and Google, and About.com. Sort of like a help engine, which I guess is a really corny thing to say. It sort of sounds like I'm Ask Jeeves or something, but we're not a search engine. We're a content company building guides to the web. It makes it sound a little bit more like Squidoo, even though it's not really Squidoo because it's not spam in an open platform like Squidoo.
Because anyone can contribute to Squidoo, but your folks have to be approved or they have to be on staff?
We have a blend. We have full-time people, we have paid part-time people, and then we have the public. And the public can contribute, but their contribution is looked at, and we develop a reputation score. So if you submit links to Mahalo and they're good, your reputation goes up. If you submit links and they're bad, your reputation goes down, and we'll treat your future reputation, your future suggestions based on your reputation. So if you submitted spam, we're probably not going to take your future recommendations too seriously, even if they're good. And if you've submitted great stuff, we're going to look at your future recommendations very, very attunely. So we might not spend much time looking at a spammer's future contributions, and we might not list them on the site. But if you submitted 10 great links and we've accepted all 10, when you send in your 11th or 12th, we're going to look at it right away. We're going to spend 2 or 3 minutes considering it, and we'll probably put it up. So if you think about that as compared to, say, Yahoo, if you don't agree with a Yahoo search result, who do you talk to? An SEO or yourself. If you disagree with how we're ranking sites, you can actually talk to the people at Mahalo or the freelancers and have a debate with them. Not dissimilar to what happens on Wikipedia where you discuss the search, not the search result, but you discuss the, you know, encyclopedia.
To keep it up,
yeah, right, and yeah. You discuss, you know, should we put George Bush as an idiot, or should we put George Bush as a genius, or should we put George Bush as the president of the United States?
The obvious question you get it all the time is you're taking on Google in a market. How do you think you can build a better search engine?
Yeah, you know, I don't think I'm taking on Google, to be totally honest. I think of Google as a platform, like Microsoft's operating system or Linux or something like that, that we're building on top of. We are building pages for the top search terms. We're building content, authoritative guides. So we're going to do Paris hotels. We're going to do iPhone. We're not going to do your pizzeria down the street. We're not going to do the girl you dated in college. That's what Google's for, every possible search. So Google's this big operating system, and we're partners with them. When we don't have a search result, which is going to be a lot of the time, we'll show you Google. When we don't have a guide page, we're going to show you Google results or Yahoo results. And when we are looking for to monetize our pages, we use Google AdSense. So we are operating in the search space, the guide space, but we're more akin probably to Wikipedia or DMOZ than to Google. And Google, as you know, loved the DMOZ for a long time, and we're partners with it. And they used to syndicate it and take it pretty seriously. Since it's been overrun with spammers, I think they take it less seriously now. So I consider us more, we're more to Google what DMOZ was.
You used the term second click in your presentation. You want to define that, explain it?
Well, I didn't come up with the term second click. Other people have championed that. But basically what it means is if you did a search for iPhone or Paris Hotels, what would the second click be? And can you take that second click and put it up onto the first page? So Paris Hotels, you might want to know what the phone number of the hotel is, how many stars it got from Michelin, what Fodor said, what Fromer said. So we sort of go and do the second or third click for the user and then put that on one single page. So it's sort of like saving users time, compressing their searching for information into one page, which helps users. You know, why should they have to hunt and peck for content?
I love the concept, so congratulations.
Well, thank
you. And I know you're going in the right direction.
I hope we are.
You're very active on your blog and Facebook and Twitter.
Yep.
I think one of the most active people on Twitter, for example. Please share how you use these tools to build your personal brand and how you use them for business and as tips for other folks.
I am myself on these services. I interact with people. I try to be a normal guy, which I am. And, you know, I'm the CEO of a company that's high profile now. But I was, well, I've always been just a normal guy. I was a writer, journalist, you know. I was nobody important just 5 years ago. Now some people consider me important. But it's given me the ability to sort of keep a dialogue going with normal folk doing good work. And I consider myself just a normal guy. And so it's my way of really having my ear to the ground and being part of the street level of what's going on the internet. I don't want to be insulated, you know. I don't want to be like the guy who comes and gives a keynote and comes out from backstage and after the keynote goes backstage and doesn't talk to anybody after. After the keynote, I like to sit on the edge of the stage and talk for a couple of hours. And
I stick around the conference, by the way.
Which I just did. And I love sticking around the conference and talking to people. That's where I learn stuff. I think these social services are like that edge of the stage, sit around and talk about stuff experience, the stage dive at the end of the talk. So I love to mix it up. The people who, and a lot of times, you know, I get haters or whatever. And they typically, though, if you get past the hate, have a lot of good points. So I think if you want to get to the truth of what you're doing, you should be really active in these things because people will criticize you and they'll compliment you and you can really get to the core of what's good about what you're doing.
The launch of Mahalo generated a ton of buzz.
Yeah,
I think a lot of that was on the tails of, you know, you Twittered, you Facebooked, and
yep,
it was buzz for Jason. What did you do to stimulate it?
I didn't really do much. I think we had a lot of high-profile investors. I think it was an audacious idea. And I think it was pretty good execution. And so I don't think it was one thing that we did, you know. So I couldn't tell somebody like, oh, here's how you capture that magic in a bottle to do it for your startup. But let's face it, I have gotten a lot of press. I pissed off a lot of SEOs. I'm going into the search space. I'm backed by the investors who backed Google and Yahoo. I'm totally transparent. And I'm doing an idea which people think has been done many times before. So it was sort of the perfect storm, I think. And I launched it at the Wall Street Journal D conference. So it's, you know, just I think a lot of little things added up to being high profile. And I'm very, very grateful for the fact that people give me their attention and consider what I'm doing. But the truth is, if what I'm doing sucks or is boring, I'm going to get my ass kicked just like anybody else. So everybody's like, oh, you know, you have to be Jason Calacanis or Kevin Rose or Guy Kawasaki to launch something. It's a double-edged sword. Guy Kawasaki keeps launching stuff that sucks, and he keeps getting his ass kicked. Kevin Rose keeps launching stuff that's cool, and he keeps getting more praise. So it's kind of interesting, isn't it?
Yeah.
You know, like, you know, yeah, you can get attention.
Well, you get the spotlight, you better have something good.
Yeah.
There's something. Oh, I'm sorry, my crutch. Sorry about that.
Don't worry about it. It's cool. Everybody's okay. You okay? You guys may not know what just happened, but we had a wheelchair crash into the table.
Yeah.
It was unbelievable. That was a first.
Exciting live interview factor.
Wow. If only that was on video. You guys don't even know what you missed.
The license has been revoked.
Exactly.
Well, thank you.
Here we go.
I'll edit it. So
sorry about
You started to mention the SEO conference, and it caused a real firestorm. You've been pretty outspoken against SEO. What's your point?
Well, I've always believed that if you make great content, you should just leave it at that. And that the SEO industry has created sort of a cold war where, like, if you don't SEO, you don't rank. And so it's there's just too many people who want that traffic. So what I've learned since saying SEO is bullshit, which was just an off-the-cuff remark I made. It wasn't like I was grandstanding. It was just a throwaway remark during a Q&A session. Was really that I never used to focus on it. But now that I've come to learn it, I learned a lot of SEOs, I realized a lot of good sites actually don't rank. A large part of my inspiration for Mahalo was actually a lot of what I learned from SEO, which was the good sites aren't ranking. Why? Oh, there's a lot of people competing. Oh, there's a lot of average sites. There's a lot of good sites. There's a lot of bad sites. The truth is the average sites, the good sites, are the problem in a lot of cases. They're the problem because the excellent sites, the truly authoritative ones, the really cream of the crop, the 10 out of 10s, they don't rank in the top 10. A lot of times it's the average, low quality, or the good that rank.
Do you think the excellent sites just haven't been SEO'd professionally? Like, because the great,
I don't think
in theory, great content gets links and gets real links, gets authoritative links, gets natural links.
In theory, but in practice, it's too easy to game the system, and it's impossible for a machine to know the difference between something that is good, great, amazing, stunning, life-changing, you know? It's just too subtle of a difference. It would be like sending a normal person to, you know, the 10 best sushi bars around the world in the 10 best cities and saying, tell me the difference between them. They wouldn't be able to tell. You would need a palate and a knowledge base of sushi that maybe three or four people on the planet have to be able to tell the difference between the 10 best sushi restaurants in the world. Well, that's what's happening on the internet. Who knows what's the best travel site? You know, who really is the judge of that? A machine is not a good judge. So search has been good enough, and it still gets you where you're going. Nobody's dying out there. But could it be better is what I think, and I think it could.
You want to extend the example you give of a Paris hotel search on Google versus Mahalo?
Well, it's not just Google. I mean, it's Yahoo and Ask actually have even worse results. But they're filled with a lot of, you know, affiliate sites. So if you're, everybody knows this, if you search for a hotel, a million pages about the Bellagio or Wynn Hotel in Vegas or the Four Seasons Hotel. Why are there a million pages? Does the Wynn produce that many? Are the hotel review sites doing that many? No. It's zillions of affiliate link sites stealing content, writing cheesy content, paying somebody $5 in the Philippines to write bad content. And that stuff is polluting the web with average content. And so people make the argument, oh, well, it's helps the user. And the way I look at it is, does the world need the 1 millionth and first website about the Bellagio Hotel? Probably not. So do something else with your life.
You're kind of getting into the theme of your presentation today, which was about do something great. You said the affiliate industry is like a great pond with amazing, beautiful fish. And what's the industry going to do to make sure we don't pollute the pond and take all the fish out and put our gas oil into the pond? And you want to expand on that theme a little bit?
Well, I just think a lot of people have short-term thinking in the affiliate space. You know, I hear things from people like, I don't know why I'm not making any money. I've been working on the site for 3 weeks or 3 months. But you know what? If you're going to make a magazine or a cable channel or a newsletter that's profitable, that's an investment of 2, 3, 4, 5 years. But everybody on the internet thinks that you have the God-given right to just be making a fortune in 6 weeks because the affiliate industry has websites that say you could be making a fortune, and they hold up checks. You could be making $100,000. You could be making $300,000. It's a very get-rich-quick environment. As a matter of fact, people are walking around with T-shirts. I saw one, make $150,000 monthly, like 20 people in red shirts for monthly.com. I'm giving them a free ad, I guess. But, I mean, $150,000 a month, that's $1.8 million a year? Can I get in on that? I'd like that job. I'll give up CEO-ship of Mahalo for the $1.8 million salary. I guarantee you none of the 20 people reading that red shirt are making $1.8 million a year. I guarantee you they're all making under 100. So if those people are so smart wearing that shirt, why aren't they just making the $150,000 a month? I don't think those people make $150,000 a year.
You gave everyone tips for performing at the Silicon Valley level, the 7-8-figure kind of performance. What are some of the tips for building the next Web 2.0 site?
I think you have to do something unique, right? There's no sense in just copying stuff that's out there. You have to evolve it. So you know, if you make a Dig clone, that's probably not going to go somewhere. You have to evolve the Dig concept, right? Because Dig was an evolution of Delicious, and Delicious and Dig were evolutions of Slashdot. And so you really have to evolve what's out there. You know, and we did Netscape and Propeller. We evolved what we thought were shortcomings in Delicious as Populist and in Dig by having editors. Something that I think, you know, Dig is starting to do, have editors. And people are shopping around business plans of social networks with, you know, social news sites with editors. So I think, you know, you really have to say to yourself, is this going to provide a discernible difference in service than what's out there? I wouldn't do Mahalo if I didn't think it would be discernibly different than About.com or DMOZ or Wikipedia or Google. What would be the point, right? And so you really have to bring something to the table. And so you don't have to rush into it. You don't have to think. You can think big, but take small steps as well. So if you think you want to have Weblogs Inc. and have 100 blogs and, you know, 10 million people coming to them a month, start with one and get one blog to 100,000 people a month before you start the second. And everybody likes to do the busy work, creating 100 logos, 100 websites, you know, and 100 SEO things, and dib, but they don't actually make the product. So just focus like a laser beam on making a great product, and everything else works itself out. That's what people forget. They get involved in everything but the actual product creation. Product creation is all there is in our industry. You talked about, oh, marketing and people paying a lot of attention to my products when I launch them. They pay attention to the products not because I'm launching them, but because I have a track record of launching interesting projects. So people are missing it, you know? They're like, oh, I have to create a lot of buzz for my product. No, you have to create a product that creates a lot of buzz. You can't create buzz. It's like that buzz marketing bullshit that everybody was talking about 3 years ago, whatever. It doesn't exist. Buzz is like love. You can't make love. You have to find a person and fall in love with them, and then love comes out of that relationship. You fall in love with a person, but it's not. You don't manufacture love. You don't manufacture buzz. Or if you do, it's manufactured love and it's manufactured buzz, which means it's not real.
You sent some negative love to Paper Post in the presentation, and you're not alone.
Okay, I think the Paper Post guys are misguided. I think Ted actually is, I don't know if he's the smartest guy. He's certainly not the smartest guy I've met. He's definitely one of the most resilient. I mean, the guy's banging his head against the wall for like 2 or 3 years now, and he's been taking it from all angles. I mean, Google, FTC, me, Mike Garrington, Scoble. Everybody hates him, and everybody hates what he's doing. And, you know, he's stubborn, which can be a good business quality. Maybe he's so stubborn that he'll be stubborn in his desire to build a successful business, but maybe he'll listen about why people think his service is bad, which is it's deceptive. If he just put all of his effort into doing something non-deceptive, I think he'd be very successful.
So one of the last questions we ask everyone on the podcast is, what websites or online tools are you using for personal productivity? Any new widgets out there that are on your... I see you've got the new MacBook Air. What websites or tools do you use?
Well, I'm really enjoying WebKit, which is the open source version of Safari's browser on Mac. It's very fast and stable. So I've stopped using Firefox as my default browser. I have all my plugins on Firefox, but I have a clean install of WebKit that I surf on because it's much faster, like 5 times faster than Firefox. And it doesn't grind to a halt because of all the plugins. And then if I have to use a plugin for Delicious or Stumble, I will then cut and paste the URL over to Firefox. So I've got this sort of way of having all the features of Firefox with all the speed of a stripped-down browser concurrently, which I think has really, really made me much more effective in what I do. I've become a big fan of IRC chat rooms. I've been starting chat rooms, you know, to discuss topics on a sort of ad hoc basis. It works really well. So I've been using this Colloquy as a chat. I mean, people use MIRC, I think, for PCs, but I'm sort of falling in love with that again, and listservs again. I love listservs. People, you know, we start listservs at Mahalo for all different topics, the how-to team, the sports team. And so they can just be these discussions that go on, and then the listserv goes away for 3 weeks, and then all of a sudden there's more activity on it. But all the people who are on the list are, you know, into that topic. So it's a lot of fun to listserv. I like carrying a BlackBerry and an iPhone with me and having both. You know, that works really well. And I just got a new thing, which is a Wi-Fi router. I don't have it with me, but you can plug your Evdo card into a Wi-Fi router and share it with your friends. So when you're at a conference or something like that, or you're with your wife or 3 or 4 people, you can just, boom, all of a sudden have your own Wi-Fi access point. Yeah. Pretty dope.
And what blogs are you reading? What podcasts are you listening to?
I listen to every episode of This Week in Tech, whether I'm on it or not, and The Gilmore Gang, whether I'm on it or not. I listen religiously to The Daily Searchcast with Danny Sullivan. although he's being very lazy and only doing like five shows, and he takes off a week and five shows. So I think Danny Sullivan needs to figure out a way to have other people run the show when he's not around, because the guy is constantly traveling on conferences and whatever. He's too busy, so he needs to get a co-host or something who can run the show when he's not around. He does have a co-host, but the co-host should do the show when he's not around. That's about it right now. I mean, I watch our own Mahalo Daily, which is our video show, which is for a general audience, not a tech audience, but I, you know, watch that every day religiously, and that's going very well. It's got 60,000 people watching every episode on average. So,
how about your blog? Are you a blog reader?
Yeah, I read blogs. I mean, I read my friends' blogs, Scobel and Fred Wilson, and you know, ex-friends like Dave Weiner. And I basically read people, you know, who have ideas. Brad Feld has always got good stuff. Jeremy Liu, actually at Lightspeed Venture Partners, who I think is wrong some of the time, but he does been writing some interesting stuff of late. I like individuals, you know. I like following people's Twitter streams a lot. I find that interesting.
What are some of the coolest things you've learned on Twitter, or neatest experiences?
Well, I'm able to, when I'm in a city and I don't want to eat alone. Like when I was in San Francisco last time, I was like, anybody want to get dim sum or Chinese? And, you know, I can go to have dim sum with 10 people because everybody's like, yeah, I'm hungry. Yeah, now? Okay. So that spontaneity is great. I just love it. When I was in Barcelona recently, I was like, where should I get hot chocolate? I'm in the Rambla. And people were sending me the address. And I was like, well, I'm at this location. I'm like, okay, go two blocks south and then go to my left. So I use, like, Twitter as my own personal bat signal slash, you know, like, personal assistant. You know, like when I was in Paris, I was like, where should I shop for clothes? And they're like, oh, I'll go to this Galleria thing or whatever. And I'm like, it's really, really helpful. I sort of actually use it as a search engine or a personal concierge.
Yeah, Joe Jaffe was looking for a lunch date this morning on Twitter in L.A.
Well, that's classic Jaffe.
Yeah.
Not able to get a lunch date.
Beautiful.
What does his wife think of him looking for lunch dates? I love Joe Jaffe. He's a smart guy.
He is. He's great.
Show. The Jaffe Juice. I don't know why you're listening to Jaffe Juice. Maybe you're a marketer. Maybe you aspire to be a marketer. Maybe you don't know what you are. Maybe we're all here. Maybe it doesn't matter. Maybe somebody's listening. Maybe nobody's listening. I don't know. I'm Joseph Jaffe. You're listening to the Daily Jaffe Juice. Your juiciest juice of the Jaffe's juice.
Beautiful.
That's how he talks, though, right?
Yeah, exactly.
It's like about a minute. And then he doesn't answer any questions. He just starts proposing more questions.
No. He plays one call in.
Is the second spot working? I don't know. Maybe it's working. Maybe it's not. Maybe you're TiVoing it. Maybe you're zipping through it. Maybe you're listening to it. Maybe it's passively impacting you. Maybe it's subconscious. Maybe you're subconsciously liking what you subconsciously don't like. I don't know.
Who are some other people you don't like right now? Who are some of the people doing bad stuff?
Well, let's be honest here. I mean, not that I dislike Ted Murphy for Paper Boats. I just like what he does. And I've told him personally and many times in public, like, clean up your act, you know, and do something that adds to the world. So, I don't, it's not like I hate anybody. I mean, I don't want to give the wrong impression. You know, people tend to think that I'm like anti-SEO crusader or something like that, or just do-gooder. I think the thing is, what I didn't realize was I always talked very bluntly about what I liked and didn't like and my opinion on stuff. And then as my voice got heard more often, I didn't realize exactly how much people were hearing it or the ramifications of it. So, like when I said Squidoo was filled with spam, and, you know, I said Squidoo was filled with spam, and then all of a sudden this whole conversation started about spam and Squidoo and should they be kicked out of the index, and there's affiliate marketing and paid links in it. And so it was, you know, kind of interesting how that, I didn't intend to give Seth Godin a hard time. I was starting a conversation like I always do. And people call me out on my BS all the time. If I make one little mistake, we're like, oh, the first question today was, okay, I'd like to list all the ways in which Calacanis is a hypocrite. You have the Alexa toolbar. You're a hypocrite. You have this. You're a hypocrite. You said that Dig was great, but Dig has spam in it. Like, I put the spam there. I was like, it's a ridiculous question. Like, you say you don't like spam, but you added everybody in your address book, and you didn't add me. I was like, I don't know about the individual incident you're talking about, but I have like 3,000 people on LinkedIn or something. I add everybody. I just haven't gotten through all of them yet, you know? It's like, so, you know, I like our industry, how we mix it up a little bit and have fun. And I thought that today was wonderful because it felt constructive. And I could tell people were thinking. So anytime I can be involved in a discussion that results in people thinking, I think it's kind of cool, right?
Yeah, I hope people connected with it. Because a few of the throwaway comments you made could have the same effect like the SEO conference. But I think your overall message, I hope people got it. And I hope this industry can start taking some positive steps, because you're totally bang on.
Well, you know, people can take anybody out of context. You know, the SEO folks like to take me out of context, and, you know, they take that one quote and they make it into, like, it's like my, the name of my blog is SEO is bullshit. Like, it's not the name of my blog, it's calcannis.com. But whatever, you know, I'm a big boy, I can handle it. I wouldn't mix it up if I couldn't handle it. And listen, we're all very lucky to work in this industry, and it's a lot of good people and a fun time, and you can make a lot of money and do incredible things. I mean, we're all very lucky and blessed to be here.
Amen. Do you have any last thoughts for our folks at 10 Golden Rules?
Well, I would say dare to be great. I think a lot of people are a little paralyzed by, you know, or intimidated by what other people are doing in our industry and, like, how well it's going. You have to remember, Kevin Rose was just like a nobody commentator on this little G4 channel. Like, he was like nobody. He was like an afterthought. And now he's king of the world, right? And he deserves to be. Why? Because he had the guts to try to do something great. And he succeeded. He did build two great services. Three. Rev3, Pounce, and then. I mean, so you look at a Kevin Rose, he's like, he's trying. And other people don't even try. You look at Mike Garrington, he's trying. O'Malik, he's trying. You know, like, people are trying to do great things. And if they fail, they fail. But really, don't overestimate the downside. The downside is you fail, and you move on, and you learn. And the next time, you're wiser and smarter. And you don't want to get to the end of your life and feel like everybody else, you know, tried and you didn't even try. If you tried and failed, who cares? If you didn't try, that's kind of hard to live with. That's my guiding principle. That's my golden rule. You miss 100% of shots you don't take.
That's great. Thanks, Jason.
Oh, my pleasure.
Well, a big thank you to Jason Calacanis for taking part. Clearly one of the guys setting the tone for the industry and really playing the drums and setting the drum beat in the jungle out there. So thank you all so much for listening to the show. A big thank you to our callers, Auction Wally, Glenn Pooler. Congratulations to Keith Burtis, newly engaged, thanks to social media chipping in. A great joke of the week, and congratulations, Larry, on your launch. And thanks to Ted Murphy and Jason Calacanis. How'd you like the show? Please take a minute right now to call in your comments or questions or any critique to 206-888-6606. Send us an audio comment or an audio file at j@10goldenrules.com. Every week we end the show with a song selection from the PodSafe Music Network, and I was absolutely thrilled to see that the Oscar-winning Best Song was available on PodSafe. I heard it on a couple different podcasts. So Glenn Hansard explained the story of the song about being at a party and his girlfriend goes to get a drink, and across the room a figure catches the corner of his eye and she looks great, and then he realizes it's his girlfriend and says, "Ka-ching!" I know that feeling, and I've experienced that a few times with my wife. So anyways, here's Oscar winners Glenn Hansard and Marketa Ergolova with Falling Slowly, the soundtrack from The Music Once. According to Wikipedia, Hansard quit school at age 13 to begin busking on local Dublin streets. He first came to widespread public attention as guitar player Outspan Foster in the Alan Parker film The Commitments. In April 2006, he released his first solo album, The Swell Season, and during filming of the movie Once, he started falling in love with Marketa. So here is the song it had from the movie Once. It had its American premiere at the Sundance Film Festival in 2007, received the festival's World Cinema Award, and recently won the Academy Award. And anyway, so here's Once. Have a great week, everybody. 10, 9, 8. Take this.
choice. You make it now. Falling slowly, eyes that know me, and I can't go back. And moves that take me and erase me, and I paint it black. Will you have suffered enough and warred with yourself? It's time that you mourn. Take this sinking boat and point it home. We still got time.
This podcast is produced with Cast Blaster.
Thank you for listening to the 10 Golden Rules of Internet Marketing podcast. Please send comments and questions to podcast@10goldenrules.com. That's podcast@10goldenrules.com. Or use our call-in line 206-888-6606.